back to Judy. Andy, he's going to revalue it. He told me that. How much gold has come into the United States? Tremendous amount. Well over $100 billion. And the amount that's coming in, I would argue, pales into comparison to how much we think is coming in. I think a lot is coming in through other channels, not just through London and Switzerland, not just into the COMEX, but privately. In fact, Vince Lancey says up to 85% of the gold imported around the globe is not reported by the central banks. They don't want to report it. They're using proxies. They're using sovereign wealth funds. They're using entities that will not identify who it is.
Andy Shechtman, Miles Franklin, good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, brother. Good to see you again. It was nice to see you in person a couple months ago at Rick's conference, a Rick Rules conference. For those of you who are wondering what show to go to, that's one of two that I always won't miss. Rick's and then the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference, Jay Martin's is another. But it was nice to see you and good to be back here with you. Thanks for having me.
Likewise, the pleasure was all mine. It was great to see you. And there is so much energy there. Is really the energy was, I think, really from the attendees. But instead of talking about the conference, really I want to talk about just really the energy that we're seeing in the metal space. But specifically, we have a government here domestically, but really across the world that really wants to print, really highlighted, really with the tremendous amount of pressure the administration's putting on the Fed to be dovish and the Fed to cut rates. And Powell came out dovish and you're really starting to see the dollar roll over. Where are we with all of that in your mind? And what's also interesting to me is that you had this thesis or what you call little by little and then all at once. And it looks like things are really, instead of becoming little by little, they're really speeding up. So where are we that in your mind?
Life is like a roll of toilet paper, man. And, you know, when you're young, you don't notice it's spinning. But as you get older, you start to see, and that's the little by little. As you get later on in life, you begin to see it spinning faster with all the things around you and your family and your friends and their families. And, you know, life speeds faster and you start to notice the cardboard is getting closer. I think all around us, these things are happening. When we talk about a Fed that is likely to cut rates, which they probably will, they're doing so into rising inflation and a massively weakened labor market. This is classic stagflation. The CPI, or should we call it the CPI from the BS, or the, I'm sorry, the BLS, has stayed above 2% for, I don't know, over 50 months, 53, 54 months was last I heard. You got the PPI, the producer price index at a three-year high. You got labor market revisions showing, you know, ridiculous cracks in the system. They revised over 460,000 jobs out year to date. And they're expected, by the way, one of the catalysts people are suspecting will be that they will revise numbers again here, big time, over 500,000. They're thinking into this September cut to give catalyst or reasons to cut it. But let's be honest here. You know, you have the Cantillon effect in action here, that where lower rates are going to benefit the top 1%, not make it easier for the bottom. And what I mean by that is that asset prices are going to remain inflated, houses and stocks and commodities. Higher rates actually, Andy, would correct valuations. They'd make assets more affordable for regular people. It would hurt the elite's portfolios. And the Fed policies, you could argue, are wealth transfer tools, not economic equalizers. It was the suppressed interest rates that got us into this problem to begin with. And the logic that, you know, dropping interest rates will make it easier for first-time homeowners, I think, is faulty. Yes, they'll be able to take more debt on, but isn't it the fact that when rates fall, home prices go higher? And, you know, it makes me nervous because At the same time, you have stock market valuations at literally 1929 style extremes. You got people, you know, all the way from Buffett to Dalio and everyone in between highlighting the systemic risk. And you got insider selling, Bezos and Zuckerberg unloading billions in stock, over $6 billion for Bezos since June. You got the institutionals or the insiders have been selling at a clip of between $2 to $4 billion a week since June. And they're going to cut into this, which tells me it's only going to go higher, sucking more of the public in. The public's at all-time high participation in the stock market right now. The largest amount of margin debt ever of over $1 trillion and the largest amount of option exposure ever in the history of the market as the insiders are selling, and this will just push asset prices higher. What could possibly go wrong as far as I'm concerned? And so, yeah, I think that... there are a lot of crazy things happening. You have dollar risks, you have rising debt, you have Fed politicization. You got all of these things happening, as you mentioned, speeding up. And, you know, the politicalization of the Fed is an interesting one because you got all these people now, you know, that are leaving, either being charged with mortgage fraud or just vacating. And the people that are being put in are certainly not by coincidence. You have Stephen Miron, who took the last spot that opened up. He's the author of the Mar-a-Lago Accord. He wants a weak dollar. He wants the things that Trump talks about to happen. And, you know, whoever fills the next opening here, I think her name is Lisa Day, I forgot her last name, but she's being accused of mortgage fraud, and rightfully so, should be out. But whoever replaces her will certainly have that same dovish attitude. We are looking at a period of time where I believe they are going to give up on the dollar as the world reserve currency. That's what they're trying to do. They want to support the bond market, but they do not want to be the reserve currency because Triffin's dilemma says you'll always have trade imbalance and you'll hollow out your manufacturing. We can get into that. It's a very tricky situation right now. There's lots of nuances to it. But the bottom line to me is that, yeah, the Fed is going to lower rates. I think certainly that would be what one would expect, especially if we see more revisions. But don't expect that to be the end all be all, you know. And let's not forget the last time they tried to lower rates by 100 basis points on the front end, that's what the Fed has the power to do on the Fed funds rate, the overnight lending rate. Immediately after that, the back end, the 10-year treasury, went up by the same amount that they had lowered the front end. That's the market's way of saying, no, we really don't want to have these really low rates on the 10-year treasury and continue to buy your debt. If you're going to inflate away your problems, well, then you have to have much higher interest rates. That's the bond market's way of saying, no, this is not going to happen. So lots to talk about, lots happening. But yeah, I think that it's certainly something to keep an eye on. I wouldn't be surprised if all of the moves that we see over the coming days, weeks, and months are specifically aimed at weakening the dollar. And this will be no difference.
Yeah, and it certainly looks like it's been rolling over here, and it's, I would even say, argue that it's even shorter term. It really looks like it's in danger here, and danger meaning that rolling over even drastically. You mentioned in protecting the bond market, but it's hard for me to see how they protect the bond market, again, with the decreasing, with the dollar decreasing. And also, you mentioned that you saw the 10-year, which is basically everybody looks at, especially for mortgages, spiking up. How do they protect that? Because it doesn't look like they did a good job. And then how does economy survive with yields really elevated or at the current levels?
Well, that's the whole thesis to my argument. Is that how do you do it? We got $28 trillion in debt coming due by 2028 with $15 trillion in tax revenue. We have $7 trillion coming due this year. How do you do it? without rates spiking? And that's the $6 million question. Well, how do they do it? I think, well, here's my thesis in a nutshell. First, you pass something called the Genius Act, the Stablecoin Bill Act, which will, I believe, crank up demand for the front end of the market, the short end, 2-year treasuries or less. All of the stablecoins that will be issued by the banks around the globe in dollars or companies like American Express and Visa, all of these stablecoins will be backed one-to-one with U.S. treasuries. This gives the synthetic demand for the short end of the treasury market to run the day-to-day of the government. It's not organic demand like it used to be, where the United States was revered and trusted. Now it's more synthetic. It's manufactured. It's they call it a stablecoin backed by debt. Doesn't seem too stable. But that doesn't take into account how do you not only support the bond market on the back end, which we'll get to, but how do you bring back your manufacturing? Because really, I think that's what this is all about. You look at the Mar-a-Lago Accord, which Stephen Meir authored, and that's the whole premise, to get manufacturing in line with where it should be. We can't do that when we've offshored everything, and at higher rates, it becomes impossible. Not only that, with a strong dollar, you can't sell your goods. All right, so we got the short end covered with the stablecoin passage or the Genius Act passage, which is going to continually provide that synthetic demand. So let's go back to my interview with Judy Shelton, who was Trump's nominee to run the Fed in 2016. She said to me, Andy, in no uncertain terms, Trump told me that on July 4th, next year, 2026, which is a massive day for him, it is the 250th anniversary of the United States, he will issue gold-backed treasuries. Really? I said, do you think gold will be revalued, Judy? Because it's held in the gold revaluation account. That's the name of it. And not in so many words, she said, after we audit what is there, yes, I do think that will happen. Now, it's happened. You know, when I started talking about gold being revalued, I got a lot of crap for it. People said, that bullshit, that'll never happen. But what do you know? The Fed just wrote a paper about it. They are talking about it. And it's not for the reasons that one would think. So let's just humor me for a moment. Let's pretend gold held in the gold revaluation account. That's the name of it. Let's pretend they revalue it. Why would they revalue it and who would it benefit? First of all, it would benefit every central bank on the planet as they've been buying gold hand over fist. But revaluing gold isn't really revaluing gold per se as much as it is devaluing the dollar. You look at guys like Mike Maloney. He says $10,000 they'll revalue it to. Now, keep in mind, it's held it on the balance sheet at $42.22 an ounce. And also keep in mind that Roosevelt did it in 33, where he confiscated gold at 20 bucks, paid everyone 20.67. That was a lot of money back then, 67 cents in 1933. And then devalued the dollar by 40%. Gold was 35 bucks. Nixon did it in 72. After he closed the gold window in 71, he moved it from 35 to 38. And then the next year, he did it to 42.22. Each one of these revaluations is a devaluation of the dollar. That's really the premise here. As Stephen Miron wants, a devalued dollar. What did Vice President Vance say on White House letterhead talking of Triffin's dilemma? He said, Triffin's dilemma is such that being the reserve currency at this time, Andy, is not good for us because it hollows out our manufacturing. We cannot provide the world enough in the way of dollars just through trade alone. So we have to continually export dollars. Countries sell their currency, which weakens it, to buy ours, which strengthens it. Therefore, our manufacturing looks very enticing over there at half the price. So we send our manufacturing over. We hollow out the manufacturing. This is the Triffin's dilemma. When you're the reserve currency, this will happen. You'll always run trade imbalances. He acknowledges that on White House letterhead. Okay, back to Judy. Andy, he's going to revalue it. He told me that. How much gold has come into the United States? Tremendous amount. Well over $100 billion. And the amount that's coming in, I would argue, pales into comparison to how much we think is coming in. I think a lot is coming in through other channels, not just through London and Switzerland, not just into the COMEX, but privately. In fact, Vince Lancey says up to 85% of the gold imported around the globe is not reported by the central banks. They don't want to report it. They're using proxies. They're using sovereign wealth funds. They're using entities that will not identify who it is. Or maybe a lot of it's coming in. The Secretary of Treasury is saying this gold is coming into COMEX. It's on part of the exchange stabilization fund under the guise of security of the United States. We'll keep it quiet. Congress doesn't need to know about it right now. Whatever it is, the amount of gold coming in that we know of is off the charts. I got all this gold coming in. We're net importers of gold for the first time I've ever seen in my career. And maybe since World War II, when everyone sent us their gold after World War II as part of the Bretton Woods Act. Anyways, so all this gold's coming in. That's the first step you'd have to do. And call it tariffs. Bullshit. It's not tariffs and it's not arbitrage. It's way deeper than that. That was the ruse. That was the cover to get it all here. So now you got all the gold here, right? Okay, so maybe Judy's on to something. What about revalue it? Well, if they revalued it, as I said, Maloney says 10,000, Rickard says 24,000. They get it different ways by dividing M1 or M2 into the gold. That's irrelevant. What is relevant is that every $4,000 increase in the price of gold, Andy, would give the Treasury general account $1 trillion free and clear. It's an accounting gimmick, the way it works. Treasury would, first of all, the president would tell the Treasury Secretary, tell the Fed to revalue gold. Done. Doesn't need congressional approval. They would, let's just say they took Rickard's number of 24,000. The Treasury would issue gold certificates to the Fed. Those certificates would give the Fed a claim on the cash value of the gold, not the gold itself, belongs to the American people. So the Fed would, in essence, print $6 trillion, just like that, boom, and give it to the Treasury general account, which is not only very inflationary, but it would also devalue the dollar substantially, as much as 60%. So the dollar gets devalued massively. Gold gets revalued. Now you can peg it to the back end of the Treasury market, as Judy said. Why would you do that? Well, you got the front end cranking with the stablecoin passage bill, right? The back end you put on so she said originally she'll do 50-year and then 50, 30, 20, and 10. So let's just pretend on the 50-year Treasury that rolls out, they pay a 1% coupon, maybe one. Redeemable in gold. 30, 20, and 10, they'll start to get rid of the interest. All the way down to 10, there'll be no interest paid, redeemability in gold. Why would they do that? Because gold will be the barometer by which the foolishness of our monetary policy and the fiscal irresponsibility translate into a higher gold price. In other words, it is the coupon. And so you can put rates at zero to bring back your manufacturing, right? You borrow at zero, bring back your manufacturing at a massively devalued dollar because gold's way up higher. You peg redeemability to the back end of the curve. Now you bring back your manufacturing, you have a devalued dollar to sell your manufacturing into, and you may just be able to grow your way out of this problem. And you look the world in the face and you say, look, we made a mistake with our fiscal irresponsibility, but we're gonna grow our way out. We're gonna start by, in essence, defaulting on the reserve status of the dollar. We don't really want a reserve currency anymore. Everyone else, you trade in local currencies. You hear that everywhere. They're all trading in local currencies. And what are they settling in? Oh, that's right. They're settling in gold. What is the whole premise of the BRICS and the Enbridge? Trade over Enbridge with local currencies, settle in balances in gold. The Shanghai Gold Exchange is opening up exchanges, multi-jurisdictional, all around the Belt Road. They just finished the one in Hong Kong, which is deliverable now in yuan. It's not even converted into dollars. And then they're building one right now in Saudi Arabia. So all of the ability to settle imbalances in gold, trading in local currencies, will be the exact same model that we strive for. Yes, we'll trade with US dollars, but we don't want to be the reserve currency because we need to sell our products to the world. What you could see for a couple of years is universal basic income, because it's going to be very difficult for the average person as inflation will rise. And they'll say, look, we're going to do this so our children and their children can have a future. We have to bring back manufacturing. AI is going to kneecap a lot of jobs. We must manufacture stuff again. And the only way to do it is a weak dollar, is zero interest rates on the back end to bring it home inexpensively, and then sell our products to the globe so we again can be the leader of ingenuity in manufacturing and production, because right now we don't do that. So how do you support a bond market? You do so by pegging it to gold on the back end, using the front end to be stable coins so you can bring back manufacturing and sell your products to the world. the revision to the gold price benefits every central bank on the planet, probably more so than it even does us. And maybe that's why we've been running it back so fast and so quietly. Who the hell's doing this? Who's taking all of this gold in? Not all of it's leaving. Some does, but the vaults are stuffed. Who's putting it in there? Does it belong to the Treasury? We don't know. All I can simply say to you is, I don't know another way out of this problem, to your point. How do we do it? If we don't, and rates spike to the moon to compensate for this massive indebtedness, just the act of paying $28 trillion in 3 years with $15 trillion in revenue, not to mention the $3 trillion a year in trade or in budget deficit, 28 becomes 37 with $15 trillion in revenue. That's a problem. What do? You revalue gold to peg it to the back end, to keep rates low, to devalue the dollar, revalue gold at a much higher price, bring back manufacturing, grow your way out of the problem. And in a decade's time or less, we again are not only the epicenter of ingenuity and thought, but also of production and manufacturing. And maybe, just maybe, we grow our way up. Because honestly, Andy, there is no other way. If you can't grow your way out, you either hyperinflate or you default. Period. One or two. This is a soft default on the dollar to maintain demand for the Treasury, to bring back manufacturing, to go full circle and grow our way out of this problem. That's my thesis. And I, you know, maybe I'm stupid for saying it, but I can't think of another way. And all of the things that I see around us tell me that's where we're going. So I don't know, in all the interviews I've been doing for the past couple months, I've been saying this. And I don't know, just like I did with the BRICS in 2019, when other people weren't saying it, I either had the stupidity or the courage to say it. I believe it. I say what I believe, and maybe I'm wrong, but I can't see any other way out of this problem when we don't make anything and AI is going to have its way with a lot of the jobs. What do we do? This is an alternative. So I don't know. What's your thoughts?
Well, okay. So I'm going to agree with just about everything you said. I can't find a hole. That being said, it's dynamic. It's very dynamic and things are always changing. So, you know, if you can get 80% right, I'm going to call that a win, a big win.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No doubt.
But I really am interested and I agree with you 100% because you're the only person, well, you're one of two people that talk about this with bringing manufacturing back. And, I would agree with that. And they've even told us that's what they want to do, right? And so I see that happening.
That's the Mar-a-Lago Accord. That's mm-hmm. what he talks about. That's Steven Mnuchin, who's now at the Fed. Yes.
Yeah. And also just looking at anecdotally, where does the administration go, like to the Midwest? And just, again, this is anecdotal, just pounding the drum of we're bringing manufacturing back. But there's two questions here. Manufacturing just doesn't come back, as you alluded to. I mean, that is, it takes years to build plants. It takes years to build product, get systems down.
At zero interest rates, it makes it a lot easier, though. Yeah. Of course, you have to buy the gold, or the gold has to be taken care of. But the point of it is that the low rates allows you the ability to perhaps even do that.
Right. And I guess you get out of the deflationary problem of backing it by gold. And that's the argument I always get. Well, that would be highly deflationary. They'd never do that, but not if they revalue gold, correct?
Correct. That's exactly right. And I mean, it's on the balance sheet at $42.22 an ounce. So marking it to market would be the very least, but why not value it higher? Why not?
And they've done it before, as you've alluded. Go ahead.
They've done it before, and it's an easier way out of the problem than outright default or hyperinflation. Now, it will be very inflationary. It will devalue the dollar tremendously. But that's why I think the crumbs, Vance says, we, you know, being the world reserve currency isn't so great anymore. And Mnuchin says we need to bring back manufacturing at a weaker dollar. Judy says they're going to peg it to the bond market. He told me that, Andy, when I was part of the transition team. She says it was on my podcast. You can go and listen to it, Miles Franklin Media. Look at the Judy Shelton interview. She says it. She's been saying it subsequently on Twitter. I've seen it on X. I don't know. The crumbs point to the remonetization of gold, backing it not to the dollar, but to the treasury market to keep rates low. Now you have a chance to bring back manufacturing at a reasonable cost at a devalued dollar to sell your product to the world. And we have enough in the way of being leaders in thought, and we've always done well with our back to the wall, the United States. I think this is an option, because short of that, you either print or you default. Richard Russell was my mentor, Andy, and I had the good fortune of getting to know him a little bit and meeting him. And he said, the Fed has two choices, but to inflate or die. Inflate or die, he always used to say, inflate or default. This was 20 years ago he started saying this, at their indebtedness then. And now, what do we do? I mean, the amount of debt that we have, $38 trillion, only is about 20% of the real debt of almost $200 trillion when you factor in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, government, military pensions. A trillion seconds ago was 31,688 years ago, and we are going about that much into debt every 100 or so days. This is a problem that will not go away unless we begin to grow our way out. We can inflate, we can manipulate, we can default, or we can find a way to grow our way out. And that's why I think they keep saying these things about the dollar. Maybe this is why we're imposing tariffs of 50% on India and tariffs on Mexico and tariffs on Canada. You know, they talk about the trade balance being unfair. Well, no, it's not unfair. Is it? Is it unfair that we can't sell our goods to the rest of the world the way we'd like to? No, it ain't unfair, because part of being the world reserve currency for all of these years has said, has basically been, look, you're gonna take dollars, you're gonna give me your stuff that you make, Andy, and I'm gonna give you my printed dollars. Bang, here's my dollars. And then I expect you to take the reserves and put it into US treasuries. What has that done? Well, that's kept our interest rates low, that's kept our asset prices high, and that's kept the goods that we buy at Walmart and Target and Costco very cheap. So over the last 50 years, we've had cheap goods, low interest rates, and high asset prices as a result of being the reserve currency. So is it not fair? I'll leave that up to everyone else to decide, but that is the benefit of being the reserve currency. They call it an exorbitant privilege that we have screwed. We've screwed it up. So now what? So now he's saying that it's not fair. Okay, so let's put tariffs on all our allies. That's not what one would want to do if you wanted to mend fences and bring people back into the fold who want to take our treasuries, who want to take our dollars. Not only do we have massive fiscal irresponsibility, we've weaponized the treasury market and the SWIFT system, and now we're putting tariffs even on our friends. Well, could it be maybe that's kind of the play here? We kind of push people away a little bit from holding our dollars and trading with one another in local currencies, kind of get the ball rolling in that direction. Okay, fine. We're going to pack our treasuries, which have, you know, the rails of the system are all intertwined with the treasury system. So we'll back it by gold to the point of it is that I don't know how else you get out of this mess. To your point originally, how do you? You don't. And if rates spike, then what happens? Well, the stocks blow up, the bond market blows up, the banks who hold copious amounts of treasuries and they're undercapitalized and overleveraged, they blow up. The insurance companies who are flooded with treasuries, they blow up. Stocks, bonds, real estate, the banks and the insurance companies, poof, that's the Great Reset. If rates really were to spike, and if when we talk about the amount of indebtedness and the irresponsibility that we have fiscally, who in their right mind would buy a long-duration treasury paying 4% when money creation, dollar's down 11% this year already. And, you know, gold has doubled the performance of the treasury for 25 years. Last year, gold was up 40%. The treasury was up 4.5%. This year, halfway through the year, that treasury is up, 2.5%. Dollar's down 11%, so you're negative 9.5%. Or 8.5% negative real return, and gold's up 40. So you can see this happening as the world is dumping treasuries to buy gold. Because of this, because of the weaponization, because of the irresponsibility, because of the realization that they have no choice but to inflate or default. So you're seeing an abandoning treasury demand, an increase in demand globally for commodities. What's the West to do? This is kind of my theory that by what I see happening, that it's already in motion.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about tariffs and also talk a little bit about money flow here. And I have a theory here I think that money flow is actually going to flow back to the U.S. And I think that is part of the grand scheme in all this with manufacturing as well as with tariffs, if you would. Just from a stability standpoint, and also as many problems as we do, this is the place still in the world to do business, if you would, because of the consumer base. And I see that happening, or I see that really highly potential happening. And I think tariffs play into that. And I'm not saying I'm pro tariffs here, but to your point, is it really unfair? Because all of these other countries, whether they're friends or adversaries, for lack of a better word, they have a lot higher tariffs than us on us than we do on them. So I'm all for free trade as long as it's free trade. And what we haven't had is free trade. And so I see tariffs acting as, again, a money flow back to the U.S. What are your thoughts on that? And that would be also, wouldn't that be negative for the BRICS countries?
I mean, look, the tariffs, have we had fair trade? Is it fair that they have to take our currency, which we print away to nothing and from nothing? You know, isn't it immoral to push a button to create wealth when the rest of us have to work, sweat, labor to create wealth? And so, I mean, yeah, the tariffs are, but they are bringing some money back to the United States. But is that, you know, who's ultimately bearing the responsibility of this? You look at India as an example. They put a 50% tariff on them, saying if you buy Russian oil, you're going to pay a 50% tariff. But India says, go pound sand. That you, even though, yes, we are their largest trading partner, it only amounts to about 2 or 3% of their GDP. Their Russian oil connection is worth far more than trading here in the United States. So what are they going to do? They're going to find other ways of doing business, and they're going to expand. You look, for example, I made a really big deal, Andy, about the fact that China came out a few months ago and they said, we've connected our bridge technology, it's M-Bridge, we've connected it to 11 countries in Southeast Asia. They're called the ASEAN countries, A-S-E-A-N, and to 5 Middle Eastern countries. Now, these 11 ASEAN countries, they have population twice the size of the United States, about 800 million people. And they are by far right now China's largest trading partner, by far. And then you add in the 5 Middle Eastern countries. These countries are growing in terms of their middle class, and they are expanding. And when you put all of these countries together, yes, they want to do business in the United States, but are these tariffs having negative impacts? You know, you look at a country like Canada or Mexico, where they're the United States represents 70 or 80% of their GDP. That would be far more harsh to them than it would be to any of these countries in the BRICS neighborhood. And so the countries in the BRICS are beginning not only to de-dollarize, but they are beginning to move away from trading with the U.S. the way that maybe we're underestimating, I think, that they couldn't do it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just happen to think that the tariffs are the wrong message to most of the world. Some of them, yes. Some of them, like Canada and to Mexico, it would be a very big deal. But they make a big deal about India. Now, if I'm getting paid, charged a 50% tariff, and you only represent just a paltry, 2% of my GDP. I'm probably going to say, you know what, there are some things that are more important in this growing alliance, and the cheap Russian oil that we're getting is more important to me than this. And maybe this is backfiring. And that's why you see Modi and Xi and Putin embrace each other last week, give hugs at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I just think that it's a little bit more nuanced than that, and I think it's pissing off a lot of the world. So I don't know just how beneficial it truly is. And a lot of people will tell you that the actual tariffs, the public, us, bear the costs of it.
Yeah.
And if not, they're not going to do it. They'll find other places to trade to a degree. Now, maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but I don't think on the other end it's as simple as saying, yeah, we're going to threaten them with tariffs, so they're going to end up, giving in, but it appears that even countries like India are not giving in. And, you know, maybe this is what we're seeing, a move away from the dollar hegemony. And because of this type of coercion, instead of befriending and giving the carrot, we give the stick way too much. And I think that it's having negative impacts.
Yeah. I would say on the record, I'm against tariffs if you have an income tax system, 100%, because then I'm being double taxed. Just I say that as an American. I am agnostic just because I think you're right. It sends the wrong message. It certainly, you can't make a case for it being immoral on the backs of somebody else. I think that's a very valid point. Yet, I just don't know what to think still. I'm seeing it.
I don't know. Out. I think India is pivoting to Russia and China.
They absolutely are. Absolutely.
And I think that's the negative impact of this.
Yeah.
And there'll be more like it. So not everyone, but I agree with you too. But I think that you're reached the point of negative returns, you know, diminishing returns. And when you're doing this to your friends, but maybe that's what they're trying to do, push everyone out of using the dollar so that they can achieve what they want. But I would say that the BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization are reshaping trade, finance, and geopolitical power as a result of this type of action. I really do feel that way.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. So let's talk about the BRICS here. Where are we at with that? Do you see this as becoming, this world becoming a lot more regional? So again, BRICS nations or North American region, Middle East, or yeah, talk to me about that. Where are we at with the BRICS?
I think people are underestimating just how big it really is because it's gone quiet. It's gone quiet largely because of what the Bank of International Settlements did to BRICS last year before the meeting in Russia, where they pulled out of Enbridge and they said that we can't be part of a technology, which is the cross-border payment system, Enbridge, that will allow countries like Russia to sidestep Western sanctions. But you see, the thing that really pissed them off is that this was a technology that for almost 5 years was developed between China, Hong Kong, Thailand, and the UAE through the BIS Innovation Hub. So the Bank of International Settlements, a Western institution, was part of this for almost 5 years, helping them integrate it into the system. They wanted to actually integrate it with SWIFT so that they could use it, you know, the whole world could be connected. Instead of it being a competitor with the dollar, I think they wanted an alternative to it. And the BIS pulled out at the 12th hour as if they were just realizing that Russia was the R in BRICS. And it really pissed them off. And not to mention Saudi Arabia was the fifth full participant in Enbridge. And it really pissed them off. So then we get to a point recently. You know, one thing that I think a lot of commentators in the BRICS space have missed is exactly the fact that Sergey Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, came out and said, this new bridge technology, we are opening up to the rest of the world with the exception of the dollar, the pound, and the euro. And so when you talk about the fact that these 11 Asian countries and 5 Middle Eastern countries are already connected to this bridge network, double the population of the United States, their largest trading partner by far, 35% of global GDP right now is connected. And then he says, we're opening up to the Belt Road Initiative, 75% of human population, 50% of global GDP. At the same time, you have BRICS Pay. BRICS Pay is the B2B side, the retail side. They're right now negotiating with rolling it out to the Belt Road. So you're talking about this technology of cross-border payment systems free from dollar intervention that will be rolled out around roughly, if you put in the BRICS, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which right now represents 41% of global population, 34% of global GDP, 24% of the land area of the world. And that's just the SCO. You put that in with the Belt Road, the BRICS, the Eurasian Economic Union, you're talking 90% of human population that will have the ability to trade in local currencies outside the dollar and settle in gold. Now, what are they doing to settle in gold? The Shanghai Metals Exchange said two things. One, you can now exchange your digital yuan for gold like that. You don't have to go to dollars first. And you can take physical possession at our brand new vault, which was just completed in Hong Kong. Vault number two is underway in construction in Saudi Arabia with the idea of building multi-jurisdictional vaults all throughout the Belt Road Initiative. And then you look at the exchanges in Dubai, in Moscow, the BRICS vault that is, or the BRICS Metals Exchange, the new one in Singapore. All of these vaults will all be interconnected, so these countries can trade with one another. Like, for example, Saudi Arabia can buy oil, China can buy oil from Saudi Arabia in digital yuan and then settle in gold and take possession of it. Pretty soon they'll be able to do it in their own home country. And so that acts as the backbone, the skeletal system of the whole system. But you look at, of the whole new ecosystem, but you look at the fact that BRICS Pay and BRICS Bridge, which is central bank to central bank, BRICS Pay, it's like a credit card almost. It's retail. It's B2B. This is all being offered to the majority of the world, not just the BRICS countries. That's the part people are missing. So you do not need to be a member of the BRICS to trade with the BRICS members outside of the dollar and outside the SWIFT. You chip away at the settlement status of the dollar massively. And then instead of putting your reserves into treasuries, which can be weaponized and inflated away, you put it into gold or into silver or into assets that have appreciated far higher than the treasury market without the counterparty liability of the United States, who, if you end up on the wrong side, you too will be sanctioned. And so I think by our own moves, we have created this demand. Now, they're being very quiet about it. And the interesting thing is, right before when they came out, Dilma Rousseff, who was the head of the BRICS New Development Bank, and the former president of Brazil a year ago said, we've agreed in principle to a new settlement system called the UNIT, which is 40% gold backed, deliverable upon request by a central bank, 60% basket of BRICS currencies. Now, when the BIS pulled out, it really pissed them off. And they're like, that's it. No new info. So you have to dig to find this. My belief is that, so they're calling that, so when they did that, they changed the name from MBridge to the Renminbi Cross-Border Payment System. It's the bridge. It is the same technology. Now, China is taking the lead on this, and instead of calling it BRICS, China is the one that is setting up the Renminbi cross-border payment with the Eurasian, with the Asian countries and the Middle Eastern countries. China is the one that is building this multi-jurisdictional vaulting system through the Shanghai to internationalize their yuan. They are setting up the rails. Instead of calling it BRICS to piss off Trump, it's just Asia, China doing it. They're doing it to internationalize their yuan. And as soon as Trump is gone or whenever they decide, bang, now you just slide the BRICS unit system right into the rails, which already work to allow 7-second trading cross-border instead of 3 to 5 days, 98% reduction in fees, and not compatible with the West. So you can't get messed with. And it's much faster. You don't have to go back and forth into dollars through intermediary banks. Bang, done. Same thing with the BRICS Pay. I'm in Brazil and I want to buy something from China. Boom, use my BRICS Pay. You're not going through SWIFT. All of this will accelerate the de-dollarization. And so I think it is a massive mistake to underestimate the BRICS because they've been very quiet and you have to do your digging. I spend hours a day trying to find more and more and more. But everything I see right now is that they are quietly building an infrastructure and gaining massive adoption. You look at Saudi Arabia, they've got a foot and a half inside the BRICS, even though they're playing the other side. They are full partners in this bridge technology. They go to all of the meetings. They're the SCO meeting, and they go to, you know, the BRICS meetings, and they turn down meetings from the West, and they're playing both sides. They haven't accepted their admission into the BRICS, but everything they are doing tells me, including building a vault from the Shanghai Metals Exchange inside of Saudi Arabia, they're building the infrastructure. And just like that, they can switch it to the unit, which they've already, Dilma Rousseff told us they've agreed upon in principle, until the BIS pulled what at the 12th hour amounts to espionage, as far as I'm concerned, by pulling the plug on in an embarrassing way on the BRICS, specifically to embarrass them at their big meeting in Kazan last year. So now things will move in a much more opaque manner. If you look close enough, you can see it.
Yeah. So I sent out the word to a lot of my listeners and to a lot of my friends that I was going to have you on. And so you're going to have a lot of people tune in onto this. But some of the questions, there's many questions, but one of the questions, and I'm not sure how comfortable you are in answering this, but
go for it. I'll answer anything.
People want actionable steps, what to take with this knowledge, if you would. So give me actionable steps viewers and listeners can take, if you would. And you can certainly say buying gold and silver, but yeah, give me some action.
Look, well, my dad graduated college in 63, and he and mom are still married. They got married in 63 when he graduated college. Spit it out. Anyways, that was 1963. My dad said, your mom and I, Andy, could live comfortably on $6,000 a year in 1963. Think about that for a second. Let's move to 2005, all right? The average price of a house was $220,000. Gold was $455 or so. Works out to over 500 ounces. Do the math. And so 500 ounces, 550 ounces. Oh, let's just look real quick. 220 divided by 220,000 divided by $550, $450 rather, is 488 ounces. So that would have bought you a house in 20 years ago in 2005. Today, that is worth north of 455 times, call it 3,400, even though it's a little probably higher than that. That's almost $1.6 million. The average house today costs you $420. It buys you four houses. So in other words, price of gold keeps appreciating, real estate's appreciating, but the dollar is depreciating.
Yeah.
The dollar is losing value. So it's not that the houses went up. Think of back to 1963, my parents could live comfortably. My dad bought a Corvette in 72 or 3. For $6,000, $7,000, a Stingray Corvette that's now $120,000. The point is that are the assets going up? Is gold going up? Are real estate going up? Are the dollar falling? If you save in dollars at a period of time when we have no choice but to accelerate inflation and to devalue the dollar, you are destined to go broke, period. If you are not a contrarian, you will be a victim. I don't care if you buy gold from me or not. I hope you do, but if you don't own assets, you're going to go broke. The rich own assets. And this is the whole concept that I started talking to you about at the very beginning, where the rich get richer because they own the assets. So you do not want to hold wealth in dollars. I don't care if your preferred way of doing things is in cryptocurrencies or in precious metals or in art or whatever it is. Whatever it is, you must own it in assets. Now, certain assets will do better than others. But, you know, the one thing about owning gold and silver or crypto in your own possession is the removal of counterparty risk. And that's a big deal. The great taking from David Rogers Webb, the whole system is over leveraged and undercapitalized. So, you know, not only has gold and silver outperformed just about every major traditional asset on the planet for the past 25 years, they are assets that are not simultaneously someone else's liability. So the bottom line is you hold your money in dollars, you're going to lose. The dollar's down 11% this year. Gold's up over 40. That's a 50% swing in 7 months. So there are other assets that are doing well too. The thing I don't like about real estate, when people say, what about real estate, is that real estate became price discovery. You throw that right out the damn window, because when you suppress interest rates for as long as we did and everyone's locked in at 3%, 4%, the prices of real estate were a direct function of cheap money. And it hasn't corrected yet. It hasn't come to the realization that we may never see interest rates like that again. And so what do they want to do? They want to lower rates again to you know, reignite the real estate. But that's just going to push prices higher and make it harder for everyone else. But what is price discovery? And as prices get too high and you know, most of the young people today are priced out of it already. Mm-hmm. I don't like real estate right now, because there will come a time where rising rates and asset prices find equilibrium. We're not there yet. But it's interesting. The only couple, gold and silver seem to me, and platinum, some of the only assets that weren't allowed to rise during the last 20 years when suppressed interest rates kept put asset prices to the moon. Why? Because gold, silver, and platinum are the canary in the mine shaft. They would signal problems. It's called Gibson's paradox, which is the inverse relationship between real interest rates and the price of gold. You step on rates like we did for 20 plus years, you have to step on gold or it shows you that the dollar isn't what it's supposed to be. And there's no interest being paid at zero bound interest rates. So gold should go way up. That would signal trouble with the dollar underneath it. So they step on gold and nothing to see here. Keep buying gold, taking out debt, keep buying dollars and taking out debt and playing within the system. You don't want to buy gold. And now, you know, it's outperforming everything. Yeah. Look at last year. Gold was up 40%, the 10-year treasury up 4%. But this is the same thing that we've seen going on now for the better part of 25 years where it's doubled its performance. So yes, I think you should own gold and silver, not to become wealthy, Andy, because it is wealth. And the biggest money in the world, the central banks, have been buying it like it's going out of style for the past 5, 6, 7 years. And now they're doing it here in the United States. And whoever's delivering all of this metal into COMEX, well, they seem to know a playbook that the rest of us don't. I don't know. It's not all leaving the COMEX, but a lot of it is. But it doesn't matter. Whoever's taking the time to bring it here, you're seeing deliveries into COMEX that we've never seen before, the largest ever in both gold and silver. Who's buying it? What's it for? I guess we'll see. So, yeah, I think you don't listen to the narrative. You look at what the biggest money in the world is doing. And at that level, they're also the most well-informed. And it's become very important to them to own it. So, yeah, I think you should as well to get out of the way of a dollar that will, according to the Mar-a-Lago Accord, according to everything we're being told, will be inflated and will be devalued. That's what they want in order to achieve their goals.
Yeah. So thank you. And I would say, and with this, you're not expecting me to say this, but you have been pounding the table, if you would, or preaching the gospel on this for a long time. And at times, I'm sure you've been taken to the cleaners or just people, just all of the resistance you've got. And that just has taken a lot of courage to do what you did. And you said, you might be crazy, you might be courageous. I'm going to put you in the courageous bucket here. And I've just really appreciated that. And we need more people that are courageous, if you would, to get out of this mess, if you want to call it.
Well, you know, Andy, I think it's important. You know, you're an entrepreneur, right? You're doing this for yourself. Yes. No one did this for you. So obviously you have ulterior motives, right? That's right. So that's the point, is that, no, you don't. You don't have ulterior motives. You're not trying to screw the public. Neither am I. And I think that this bias that people have about trying to be a good businessman or woman, running a solid business. We've never had a customer complaint in almost 36 years and $13 billion in sales. Not one material complaint by a customer or by a regulator or any type of complaint levied to us by the state. Nothing. We've had no complaints. And I'm very proud of that. And I started doing this when I was 19 and I'm 55. And so it doesn't need to be mutually exclusive of one another, doing the right thing, being a good human being and running a good business. And so a lot of people think I'm talking my book. I am the poster child for doing what I say, not being hypocritical. So I don't care if people don't listen to me. I do, and I often ask myself, after all of these years and all the business we've done, do I really need to put my family's name out there like this and say these things? I don't know why I do it. Maybe, and I'm not trying to make myself sound bigger than I am at all, but how else do you say, I don't know why? Is it a calling? Is it, do I feel I'm supposed to, or am I just convincing myself that that's what it is? All I can tell you is that I enjoy what I do. I spend 3-4 hours a day reading and researching, and I enjoy it. I find myself informed, and I want to tell people what I found out. And whether or not it benefits my business isn't the idea. I mean, yes, I think ultimately the goal is to build a stronger business, but it's also to speak truth, because you come out here and do this where millions of people will watch what you say, you're exposed as an idiot real fast if you aren't genuine. I'm not the smartest guy in the room. Peter Schiff is a lot smarter than me. I'm just trying to outwork people and just say, this is what I believe, this is what I see, take, do your own research. And I do it through effort and elbow grease. That's the best way I can explain it. But I thank you for your compliments and just want people to think that in this country, you're supposed to be able to run a good business and be a good person at the same time, right? They don't need to be. If I were going to write a book, I'd call it How to Get to the Top Without Being a Prick. I mean, that's just the truth. So sometimes I feel I need to say it. But anyways, for what it's worth, I'm sincere about everything I said. And either I am stupid or I am, you know, just brave enough to say it. And that's been my MO now going on 6 years on everything I say. When I started talking about the BRICS in 2019, everyone said I was stupid. But lo and behold, here it is. And so not to say I have a crystal ball, but I spend a lot of time researching and I'll tell the world what I see. So this is what I see.
Well, keep on doing what you're doing. It's been a huge encouragement for me and also just being a part of this community and pitching ideas at each other. I want to tell all my viewers and listeners, I had a conference here in the spring and it was wildly successful. And I say that with humility and it surprised myself. And we gave away gold coins and they were Miles Franklin gold coin and silver coin. And I wouldn't have done it with anybody else. Just saying on to all my viewers and listeners. And Andy was so responsive, got the shipment. There's just no issue. And we got great prices and all of that. And so
I'd love to be part of it next year, Andy. If you're doing it again, please, I'd like to come and be part of it. I'd really like that. So thank you for the plug. But absolutely. If there's room for me, count me in next year.
No, absolutely. Andy, where can just give me your website and I'll put all those in the show notes as well as link to your new channel. How can people find you?
Yeah, milesfranklin.com is the website. But in truth, we don't publish. We only allow prices, small purchases on our website. Info at milesfranklin.com. It would be helpful if they saw us on the Andy Mallette Show. Info at milesfranklin.com. Ask for our price list. Now, our price list will be updated once or twice a week. But it should be as good or better than anyone in the country. If you see prices better, let us know. Often we can match it or even beat it. There are reasons I don't publish them. A lot of reasons. But for me, I figure for my own reasons, it's the best way to do things. So info@milesfranklin.com. Any questions you heard here, would like further explanation on anything that you have questions on regarding precious metals, prices, IRAs, whatever, storage, info@milesfranklin.com. We'll send that out to you with no obligation. If you want to be contacted, put your number down. Let us know. Check your spam. One out of every 10 or so will get flagged coming from a corporate server into spam mail, but we're pretty responsive and get it out very quickly. And that's the best way to reach us or ask any questions or myself personally, info@milesfranklin.com.
Thank you, Andy. I'll put all of this in the show notes and really looking forward to having you on again.
Always looking forward to coming back as well, Andy. You stay well, brother. And until next time, I'll be looking forward to it.
All right. Take care.
See you, bud.